We're doing the Netivot Shalom, the Rebbe of Slanim and Parshat Bo, and the subject is Uvmura Gadol Zogilu Shechina, great awe. That's a reference to the revelation of the Shechina, of Hashem's holy presence. And the Netivot Shalom is going to touch on many interesting and important topics. We begin. Vayomer Moshe Komar Hashem, Kachatzot Alayla, Ani Yotzev Etoch Mitzrayim Umet Kol Becho. Moshe says, so said Hashem, come midnight, I am coming out in Egypt, and all the firstborn will die. We have to understand, what does it mean, Hashem's coming out in Egypt? Mitzrayim was filled with idols. Moshe tells Pharaoh, I'm going to leave the city and pray to Hashem. Our sages point out, he didn't pray inside the city, because the city was filled with idols. So then how come when we hit when we reach the plague of the firstborn, it's as though Hashem goes into Egypt. You can't even pray in Egypt, so Hashem appears in Egypt. And specifically, it's difficult to hadgasha b'toch Mitzrayim. Why does the pasuk stress, I will go out in Egypt? If you see what's written earlier, in the parsha of this month is your first month, it says, "Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aaron be'eretz Mitzrayim." Thank you. Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt. Pershu Chazan she has a michutz lakach. So our sages say it was just outside the city. Ve'lo b'toch hakrach. It wasn't in the city. She'etam la'gilulim, because the city was filled with idols. V'ilu kan mudgash b'toch Mitzrayim. And here Hashem's saying, Hashem is stressing, I will appear within Egypt. So how did Hashem come down within Egypt that is so filled with idols? So we should explain. We find in the Arizal's work, Likutei Torah, that what happens in the plague of the firstborn? We say it in the Haggadah, great awe, meaning the revelation of Shechina. Hashem himself, b'chvodi uve'atzmi, Hashem's presence appears. Ki b'mitzrayim hayta tum'a nora b'yoter. In Egypt, there was a tremendous defilement. V'yefshar haya lorid l'sham malach. No angel could go down into Egypt. It was too defiled. O saraf, b'entochaz b'hematuma. Even a seraph angel was in danger. Maybe the tuma would affect them. So that's why Moshe and Aaron couldn't be representative either within Egypt. Moshe has to leave Egypt to pray. Egypt is too defiled. That's why Hashem says it has to be me. I personally will do the plague of the firstborn. But we have to understand, why is this only relevant with the plague of the firstborn? You cannot say Moshe Aaron. How did you have the first nine plagues performed by Moshe and Aaron? So we can explain that the 10 plagues correspond to the 10 cycles that we describe with regards to the klipa. We know that in life we have external encasings. There's the core, there's the essence, and then there are external encasings. So that's one of the ways we view the world. We say there are 10 layers, so to speak, before you get to the core, to the essential things. Those layers get in the way. And we say there are 10 cycles within those layers. And the plague of the firstborn represented the crown, so to speak, the utmost, contending with the utmost layer. That's why there's an illusion that the plague of the firstborn hits the crown, hits the throne, hits the son of Pharaoh who should take over the throne, because it represents the ultimate encasing, the ultimate external encasing that gets in the way of doing mitzvot. That's the most difficult external encasing. That's why this plague that was contending with the utmost, the most potent external encasing, it couldn't be done by an angel or Moshe and Aaron. Mishum hachashash shu nechazim baklipa, because there was room to be concerned that they would be affected by it. Hashem personally says, I'm going to do the 10th plague. We have a buildup. As the plagues move on, we are slowly peeling off all those layers that Mitzrayim represents. Everyone thinks the Nile is the source of sustenance. The first plague, bam, no Nile. I changed the Nile from a source of life to blood. Nothing can live in it. Suddenly it's all salty. And so on. Tzfardea, they believe their fertility comes from the frog. Hashem shows them he can make the frog multiply in a damaging way. And each plague, they think their sorcerers have power. Hashem gives them a plague of lice. They don't. The sorcerers can't do anything. Every plague tackles a different aspect, a different layer, a different type of layer that stands in the way of doing mitzvos. And every plague reveals another layer. Now we have to take down the final layer, the firstborn. Everyone thinks they're a god. Everyone thinks the firstborns have extra power in Egypt. Hashem says, I'm going to take them down. I'm going to show what a real firstborn is. That's my people Israel. Okay, but I have to do it because it is the utmost layer. Based on this, we can also understand why did they need 10 plagues? Hashem could have hit them right away with the utmost plague, the plague of the firstborn. And the Egyptians would have said, hey, we're all dying, get out of here. Hashem could have accomplished it with one plague. But rather, it's the way Maseios Yesharim writes about holiness. That's a very high level. Kedusha means that every action a person does is dedicated to Hashem. Then Yiludi Sham Sugal Bikohot Atzmola Sing Madrigazo Shel Kedusha Shekol Masav Yu Kodesh Kodashim. A human being cannot attain this level on his own. A level where everything he does is so holy. Ki imet madrigat ha-tahara she-yapreshut min ha-ra va-chomer. The level we can attain is the level that's called tahara, where a person can separate himself from the mundane, from the physical, from that which is evil. A person can pull away, but that doesn't mean he can sanctify himself so that every action he does is holy. So how does one attain such holiness? You begin by trying, and ultimately you might get that heaven, that gift from above. When a person tries with all his might to be a holy person, that everything he does is for the sake of heaven, that means he smiles. He's a nice person. He's warm. He's kind. All of that for the sake of heaven. So then Hashem can give him the gift of holiness, but it's a gift. So using this concept, we can explain over here. In order to break out of the encasing of the Egyptians, remember the Jews had been covered by the layerings of the Egyptians as well. How do they break out? Moshe and Aaron are bashing down, peel by peel, encasing by encasing. The Jews suddenly see, oh, the Nile is not God. The frog is not a god. The sorcerers are not a god. One by one, Moshe knocks them down. And then ultimately you reach the final plague, and Hashem says, here, I'll give you a gift. I'll show you even the firstborns, even every idol is not a god. You have the revelation of the Shekhinah. Hashem says, I'm running the show here. We could only receive that gift that we received with the plague of the firstborn after the preparation of the nine. So we have to explain, what does it mean Hashem reveals himself with this plague? We don't find such a term anywhere else other than Exodus, that Hashem reveals himself. You don't find it with the splitting of the sea. It says over there that the maid saw what the prophet Ezekiel didn't see. It doesn't say it about Sinai. It says Hashem opened the seven heavens. They saw there's nothing but Hashem. But it doesn't say Gilui Shechina, Hashem revealed himself. Only here in Egypt do we find this term. So he says the idea of Gilui Shechina is that Hashem reveals how much he loves Israel. Even when Israel is on the lowest rung. Here we were on the lowest rung. And Hashem reveals Himself. It means Hashem reveals His love for Am Yisrael. That's what was being revealed when we were taken out of Egypt. And that's what the Me'orei Naim writes about the candle of Hanukkah. We have a rule. The Talmud tells us in Tractate Sukkah that Hashem never goes down beneath 10 tefachim, 10 hand widths. The Shekhinah always stays above that. Yet we have a mitzvah to light our Hanukkah candles where? Beneath 10 hand widths. Because the essence of Hashem's will is to show us that no one is beyond Hashem's sight. It doesn't matter how low a Jew goes, Hashem says, I'm keeping an eye on you, I care about you. And in those days of Hanukkah, the Jews were so low down that it was almost like they were gone. You had so many Jews who were leaving the fold, so many Jews who were adopting the Greek lifestyle. And Hashem says, I'm coming down, I'm not letting you go. Ordinarily, I don't go beneath the 10 tefachim, but I'm not letting anyone go. This idea that Hashem says, I'm with you, and it doesn't matter how down you go. And that's compared to the following mashal. You have a prince who falls into a well, and he's drowning. And there's no one there to save him. So if there's no one else, the king himself climbs down in his royal clothing to the depths of the pit, and he saves his son. He doesn't say, I don't climb into pits, I don't go into wells. He says, if the boy's drowning, I'm going to go. That's what happened in the Exodus. It says Hashem rushed us out of Egypt. Our sages say we were down on the bottom rung. We had gone down 49 steps of defilement. And we were about to fall one more step. We were almost gone. So we were so deep down. And Hashem says, I'm coming out at midnight. Come midnight, I'm revealing myself in Egypt. What does midnight represent? Midnight represents the ultimate darkness. And we can add to this. You guys remember we said it was the worst night of the year for the Jews. The Egyptians believed on this night, their god, the sheep, the zodiac of the sheep is most potent. The middle of the month, the month of their zodiac. And on this night, Hashem says, I'm revealing myself at that minute. In the first half of the night, you have some leftover light from the day. The second half of the night, you start having the sparks of the coming day. The middle of the night, that's when the sparks of yesterday are all done, and the sparks of tomorrow have not yet begun. That's the ultimate darkness. So in Egypt, which represents the ultimate defilement, the ultimate darkness spiritually, Egypt, that's called Ervat Haaretz, the land itself represents the uncovering of what should be modest, the Egypt that represents this idea of, I don't know Hashem, the king can say, never heard of God. The king unabashedly says, Lo yadati et Hashem. And the Jews are there on the verge of falling off the last rung. Hashem says, I'm coming down to the epitome of darkness, to the epitome of defilement, and I'm going to save the Jewish people, and I'm going to teach them that it doesn't matter how far down a Jew falls, I'm still coming after him. I'm not letting anyone go. So then that's the idea of the Shekhinah coming down into Mitzrayim. Even though Egypt was filled with idols, and ordinarily Hashem doesn't come near such a thing, but Hashem's showing us His love for Am Yisrael. Hashem says, at midnight I'm revealing myself. I'm going to that defiled place, a place I don't even let angels go. You don't even pray in that place. But I'm going down. I'm going down to save my kids. And that's the special level of Gilui Shekhinah, where our sages said that only at that moment, at the plague of the firstborn, did Hashem reveal how great the Jewish people are, how much Hashem loves them. Remember, what was the first message Hashem sends Pharaoh? Hashem tells him, Beni Bechori Yisrael. You think you're enslaving a lowly nation. You're taking my chosen son. Hashem says, even though they're down there, I know they're defiled. I know they're on the bottom rung. They're still my chosen son. Ordinarily we say that galut, exile, represents losing dat. A person's thoughts are in disarray. Geula, redemption, represents clarity. Suddenly things make sense. You suddenly understand Hashem. Da'at, we know that knowledge represents connection. Adam knew Eve. He connected with Eve. When a person loses their da'at, what does that mean? A person's in exile. A person forgets how much Hashem loves him. One of the worst things that can happen in a person's life is when he feels like he's alone. Hashem's not with him. I told you guys the story about Shehakol Niyabidvaro. My favorite blessing is Shehakol Niyabidvaro. Why? I was on a date, and I said to the girl, you know, we're spoiled. She heard me say, you know, you're spoiled. I meant, we have a shower, we have electricity. I didn't mean to say anything personal to her. She thought I was telling her she's a spoiled brat. That's not what I was saying. We were talking about something, and I was pointing out that we live in a generation that has so much blessing, we're spoiled. You know, we don't even think about going out to the well to draw water. We push a button, we get our laundry done. Nothing personal. But she thought I was getting personal. So she said, yeah, and then she started cursing me out. So for 5 minutes, she's telling me what I'm worth, right? Not too much. And I didn't even know why she was saying this. Like, I didn't understand, what did I do to deserve this? So I'm listening politely, not saying a word, not understanding, what did I do to deserve this? And after she finished, I had nothing to say. So I took out a bottle, I poured a cup of water, and I made a Shehakol Niye Bidvaro. I took a drink, and just as I said, Shehakol Niye Bidvaro, I smiled. So she looked at me and said, what are you smiling about? So I said, I'll tell you. For 5 minutes you were talking. And I was listening. And during those 5 minutes, I felt there was nothing in the world but you and me. And you were telling me that I wasn't worth too much. You see the dirt on that floor? I feel less than that. But then, after you finished talking, I said, Shehakol Niye Bidvaro. And I reminded myself that there isn't just you and me sitting here. Shehakol. Everything, Niye Bidvaro, came to be in his say-so. So he decreed I should be here right now and listen to this. So even this is Niye Bidvaro. Even this, what just transpired, is his say-so. So I could smile. If he's here and he said this is the way to play itself out, I can smile. And ever since that date, I love the blessing Shehakol Niye Bidvaro, because it represents to me all of life. Everything is Niye Bidvaro. It's not just, everything is by his decree. It's not just the cup of water I'm about to drink.
That wasn't your wife, but your future wife, right?
No. We did not get married, even though I did continue dating her.
You're right, but not everybody's at your level.
But it's a benefit. He says, when a Jew forgets how much Hashem loves him, that's galut. When a Jew can connect to that idea, it doesn't matter where he is, he has koach. It's one of the most powerful things when a person can feel like Hashem values me. We all have moments in our life where we don't give ourselves too much credit. We have moments where we think, oh boy, did I mess up. And we don't feel like we're worth 2 cents.
What about the way where you say, I don't think I deserve this? That's not giving you too little credit. That's like...
Well, that depends.
You feel something happens and you say, this I don't deserve. This is not fair.
That's a different question. I think... I can't give a short answer to that. There's a long answer. I'm trying to think if there's a way to say it in a short way. Give me a second.
No, I agree with what you said, to be able to smile when somebody, you know, lashes out. That level. time in that yard. I mean, I agree. I'm not agreeing. I'm just saying.
I don't see a short answer to that. If you remind me later tonight, we can try. Our sages say the only reason a person transgresses is if suddenly a spirit of foolishness enters him. What does that mean? He loses that recognition that he is a prince. He loses the recognition that Hashem is with him. When a person can forget that Hashem is in the room, then he can do a lot of things. When a person thinks for a minute, Hashem cares about me, well, then I have to think about my behavior. It works both ways. It gives us the strength to get up in the morning. It gives us the strength to believe that tomorrow will be a better day. It gives us the responsibility to behave differently today and now. So the correct understanding is when a Jew understands, believes that Hashem loves him. And Hashem is connected to him no matter what state he's in. And when Hashem helps a Jew and he understands truthfully that he is a prince, he is the son of the king, there is something godly about him. That's redemption. There are times in life when a person feels like everything is destroyed. He's got nowhere to look. And the only place a person can look is inside and say, Hashem believes in me. Hashem gave me life. Hashem gave me a part of him. And like the Holy Grandfather of Slanim said on the Pasuk, Musar Hashem Beni Altimas. When Hashem rebukes you, Hashem, son, don't be revolted by it. A person can be disgusted by it. Shlomo Amar says, don't. The Rebbe of Slanim explained the Musaro Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu LiYehudi Hu Beni. The Rebbe of Slanim said, you have to put a comma earlier in the Pasuk. When it says, don't read it as, the rebuke of Hashem, my son, don't be revolted by, but rather put a comma. The rebuke of Hashem, comma, or colon, my son. The rebuke of Hashem is that sentence. One word, my son. You are my son. You are a prince. Altimas. Don't hate yourself. It's not fitting for a prince to hate himself. That's how the Rebbe of Slanim explained the Pasuk. How powerful. One of the great weaknesses of our generation is how people are disgusted with themselves, and so they cover it up by being disgusted with everything but themselves. And with that understanding, we could also explain Musar Hashem Bini. Hashem says, my rebuke to you is, I love you like a son. The same declaration I made in Egypt. What's there to love about these people? They've hit the bottom rung. Memtet sharei tuma, they're at the bottom, and Hashem still comes out and says, Beni bechori, that's my chosen son. So how could you do against my will, Hashem says. Why does a person do against Hashem's will? Suddenly foolishness enters him. Suddenly he loses his knowledge. What knowledge does he lose? The knowledge of how much Hashem loves him, how much Hashem is connected to him. Remember that, and then how could a person sin? There's nothing more foolish than that. What happened in Egypt? The Jews lost all focus. They couldn't connect to this idea that Hashem loves them. What was Geula? Redemption was when the Jews recognized, when the Jews were shown Hashem's Shechina. Hashem's appearing in Egypt suddenly and says, yeah, I don't belong here. I never come to places ever, let alone such a defiled place. But I love you. I care about you. I'm going to do something about it. That recognition, when Am Yisrael suddenly saw, wow, Hashem loves us, that was the redemption of Israel. As the verse says, V'yad'u Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. Mitzrayim, he says, is a reference to the Jews. The Jews who were like Egyptians, V'yad'u Mitzrayim, the Jews who were all the way on the bottom, totally encased by the Egyptian attitude. Mitzrayim comes from the word Meitzer, to encase, to envelop, to trap. That's Mitzrayim. Paro says, Lo yadati et Hashem. I don't know who Hashem is. That's what Mitzrayim represents. You think there's Hashem? No, it's nothing to do with Hashem. What was the redemption? V'yade'u Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. Let all those who are totally encased in Mitzrayim come to the point of V'yadu. They should know, they should connect to me, Hashem. As was explained earlier, Moshe says to Hashem, but the Jews won't believe me. How will Paro believe me? So Moshe says, they won't believe in you, Hashem. No, that's not what Moshe said. Moshe said, they won't believe that they can be redeemed. V'lo yaminu li doesn't mean they won't believe in you. They won't believe, how can we be redeemed? We know what lowlifes we are. Yeah, doesn't everyone know what lowlifes they are? That's the message. That's the redemption where Hashem says, no, you're not. I care about you. That's such an important message. I once had the opportunity to teach in a home for abused children. And one of the children once said to me, I'm not worth anything. So I said to him, why do you think you're not worth anything? So he said to me, in school everyone picks on me. When I come back to the home, everyone picks on me. He was the youngest kid in the home. He says, my parents abuse me. So, obviously, I'm not worth anything. So I said to him, I took off my watch. I said to him, here's a gift. I gave him my watch. So he said to me, why are you giving me your watch? I said, so that anytime you think that no one cares about you, you could look down at the time and think, this minute someone cares about me. Someone gave me this watch. Wear it. And you should always know someone cares about you. They might pick on you in school. They might pick on you in the home. They might pick on you at home. But there's someone here who doesn't pick on you, who really cares. And it was a turning point in his life. Wow, someone cares. When a person feels like he's all alone, so then a person can really feel worthless. When a person can connect to the feeling Hashem cares about me, then nothing can make him feel worthless. The Egyptians could put the Jews into servitude because if I don't have self-worth, then no one else can give me self-worth. If my self-worth is contingent on you, what do you think of me? Then I'm not worth too much. If I need to drive the Rolls Royce, if I need to wear the latest shoes, if I have to have the latest cell phone, if I have to have the latest haircut, if I need to be cool so other people value me, then I'm not worth anything. It's a house of cards. And I know it all along. The greatest value, the greatest self-confidence a person can have is when he feels like, I am chelek Eloah mimal. I am a part of Hashem. I have value. I have a purpose. And my purpose is not defined by anyone else. It's defined by one. The more a person can connect to that, the happier a person will be, the more self-confidence a person will have, the less a person is influenced by anyone around them. So the Jews ask Moshe, how are we going to be redeemed? We have idols. How's Hashem going to redeem us? We're still worshiping the sheep. And then it says, Vayaminam, the nation does believe. Hashem gave them clarity. Suddenly they believed that as much as they were suffering, Hashem was suffering with them. Totally different concept. When a person suffers, his first thought is, what's Hashem doing to me? When a person can think, Hashem is suffering with me, the idea that the Shekhinah cries over a Jew's suffering, then his whole picture changes. And that's what the Pasuk says, you have to remember the day you left Egypt, your whole life. We have a commandment to remember leaving Egypt every day, because a Jew has to remember every day his connection to Hashem, every morning and every night. When things are dark, when things have reached their utmost darkness, why does Hashem go out in midnight? Midnight is the time that nothing's left shining from yesterday, nothing's shining yet from tomorrow. Hashem says, at that time I reveal myself. And when a Jew can have clarity that Hashem is with him, that the great king is standing and watching him, that's redemption. That's when a Jew remembers, I am the son of the king. And as our sages said, a person only transgresses when he's taken by foolishness. And the grandfather of Kovrin said, the worst thing that can be is when a Jew forgets he's the son of the king. The Jews in Egypt were at the bottom rung, and when they started understanding that they're the chosen people, they're the sons of Hashem, they were redeemed. What does the Yetzer Hara do to us? How does the Yetzer Hara knock us down? He knocks down our spirit. It says, by Yosef, Potiphar's wife, grabbed him bivigdo. What does the word bivigdo mean? So bivigdo could mean his garment, but bivigdo could also mean in his being a traitor. We all have elements in our life where we say, I'm a traitor. I haven't lived up to my responsibilities. Why should Hashem be with me? I know what I'm worth. And Yosef answers her, Einenu gadol b'bayit hazeh mimeni. There's no one greater here than me. Hashem values me. I have a portion of Hashem with me. One of the ways the Yetzer knocks us down is by making us look at what we've done wrong. So then we look at ourselves and say, of course Hashem doesn't like me. I don't like me. I know how bad I am. I can't stand myself. Hashem's going to love me. Ah, but if I can't be at peace with myself, how could I be at peace with anyone else? How could I imagine that life is leading to anywhere positive? When I feel so bad about myself, so then the whole world is dark. Of course the world's going to continue being dark. Ah, wait. Einenu gadol b'bayit hazeh. So Potiphar's wife tries to grab Yosef and she keeps telling him, come on, you've turned on Hashem. Look at your life. And the answer to that is what Yosef says, no, there's no one greater here than me. I'm a part of Hashem. I am important. And that's why the Torah says you have to remember the day you left Egypt your whole life. A Jew has to remember that as deep down as we were in Egypt, Hashem revealed himself. Hashem showed his life. In midnight, the darkness of darkness, in Egypt, the defiled of the defiled, contending with the worst klipah. Where is Hashem? Paro says, never heard of him. There Hashem says, I'm willing to reveal myself. Matters, it doesn't matter. No, I love you so much, it's like the king climbing into the well. I will appear for my chosen nation, Israel. And that's the root of the strength of a Jew, when a Jew can connect to that concept, and wherever he is, realize that there's a spark within him that represents Hashem, and that Hashem hasn't left him. That from there, a Jew can always grow. And that's the root of a Jew's growth, and that's why a Jew has to remember it every night and every day.